Yeah, g'day footy fans. Welcome to the show. Welcome to the Tripod Live with Winnie and Clarkie. We are here to recap everything round 10 from Magic Round. Dolphins shock the Sharkies. Tigers go back-to-back and the Cowboys absolutely prove me wrong if you watched our preview show. All that and more in this episode. Before we get to it, let me welcome in my co-host Winnie to say g'day and recap all of our best bets.
And your Titans didn't even make your top three headlines, mate. So that tells you what kind of weekend it was. The theme of the round was Queensland. Queensland sides victorious. So as a bonus for Queensland fans, we're going to do about 5 minutes of Queenslanders only. At the end of the show, I'm going to put Clarkie on the spot and get him to name his current Queensland forward pack, because I reckon that's a pretty fun debate and people can debate it with us and at work. But we'll save that till the very end because a lot of Queenslanders shone on the weekend. I was very fortunate to be there on Sunday, a cracking day with a bunch of the Tripod following, including Tristan. Topsport put it on for us. Sadly, you weren't there with us, Clarkie, but you're going to make the next one. I can touch on the day a little bit, but for the round, we've won six straight best bets, actually 2-0 on the two best bets, which were both Friday night. But bloody mixed matchup goes down 30-28 when I feel like I nailed it. The South Sydney weren't even challenged by the Storm. Nearly scored at the end, but had 28 points. And the Bulldogs score four of their five tries from kicks, don't miss conversion, and come up with 30. And I feel like they deserve to lose by double digits. I'll get to that. Had a big multi, 50-1 that was close, but foiled by the Sharkies and ultimately by your Titans too. And the same gamer lost by 2 points as well. So plenty to unpack. Where do you want to begin?
The mixed matchup, it was one of those ones where the Rabbitohs were the better side, just didn't get the chockies there. And I remember messaging you once Reece Walsh got that ball for our same game multi. I was like, oh, we've got a big chance here. First tackle, it goes over the sideline, but that's okay. Let's jump into the first game. It was the Raiders beating the Bulldogs 34-30. My MVP was Matt Tomoko in this one, Winnie. I feel like he's in some pretty good form, and I suspect he'd be in a lot of people's Kiwi side if they were picking one today. We lost the mixed matchup on this one, and it was a high-scoring contest. What did you make of this one?
I think Tomoko is a really good call. I'm watching him starting to think he's more than just good. He's verging on a star outside back. He's that hard to handle. Look, what really stood out to me in this one, in the second half, when the Raiders were really looking like they could pull away, they were denied wrongly by the ref twice for beautiful tries. I mean, Whiten, that's a great ball to Gula, but because he's moving backwards and Gula's hitting it at pace, maybe it looks forward to the ref. It wasn't. It was a key moment. And then Savage scored off the breakaway where the ball hit Whiten's head and they called knock on and there was no challenge. Even if they had been able to challenge, it wouldn't have been able to give them a try because the ref blew it up. But imagine Sticky. Can you imagine his press conference? I guess he was happy in the end because they hung on by 4 points. And that does illustrate the importance of getting the best line and jumping on the pod bet on Wednesday when it was -3.5 with the Raiders, because by Thursday, Friday, it was -4.5, -5.5. That's the difference between winning and losing. So glad we won the best bet there. We definitely deserved it. Although, as I said, it was rough for the mixed matchup to cop 30 by the Dogs.
If we had lost our best bet on this, I actually would have been upset, because you're right. That was going to be a try for Jack Whiten. And the very next set, Bulldogs went down, scored and converted it. So it was a 12-point shift. Whiten's going to score another post there. So really, really unlucky there for the Raiders.
He threw the ball to Gula.
Super, super unlucky there. The Raiders, though, that is four wins in a row for them. And all four have been 6 points or less. This one being 4 points. So they're getting it done, but it's been close. And that's the difference between a side like them and the Dragons, who have lost the last four, but super close. It's a really, really close season, this one. I will give the Doggies a wrap, though. Like, they have some serious injuries right now, and they're valiant, and they're trying in these games. And you can see there are some foundations there for a quality footy side moving forward. Burton's bomb, though, I thought they underutilized it. They did use it a fair bit, but the Raiders were struggling to catch some of his kicks. And I just feel every set, fifth tackle, he should have been setting up deep and getting ready to put that up, because it was brilliant every time he got it. But yeah, 11 tries to start this one. As a neutral fan, it would have, been a fun game to watch. 11 tries, great way to start Magic Round. After that, it was the Broncos taking on the Manly Seagulls. They got a big win, 32-6. I went Cobbo for my MVP in this one, Winnie, but you could go Haas, who played 60 minutes, maybe Walsh. He was excellent as well. The game, not so much, though. This was a complete shutout by the Broncos, and Seagulls really didn't offer much, did they?
And I could throw into that Paddy Carrigan because he's always great, and Flegler. Basically, the Broncos middles had their way with no Gerbo there. And it's really worrying signs for Manly now. I mean, the start of the year, well promising. They won the preseason cup or challenge, whatever it's called. But some very lackluster performances. Turbo, it's honestly, I said this in the comment thread. It's sad to see. Like, we had a best bet on Brisbane, and I'm a Queenslander, and I'm still sad to see Turbo's just not himself out there. Brisbane gets back on track, which is why we made this our best bet, because we predicted that. So minus 10.5, never really in doubt. 22-0 at halftime. In fact, we were poised. You won your take on Toppy. So you're in positive for the season with Arthur's scoring, which was a double up. And that was also in my same gamer. So we were so well poised to hit another same gamer. Odds, I think, 660 this week. And we just needed more than 22 points in the second half. Brisbane to win the second half. Oh, that, and that's it. Oh, no. Yeah, that's it. That's it. Sorry. Because we had the try score a leg and Brisbane did win the first half. So you're thinking could be a blowout. And then there was no points for the next 30 minutes. Basically, Manly had nothing in him and Brisbane was just happy to keep him, you know, well and truly at arm's length. And then the funny thing is, well, not funny for us, kind of sad that it's still nearly won because then there were three tries in the final 10 minutes, and which led to, which was, I think, 18 or 20 points. Must have been 20 points. So I think there was four tries in the final 10 minutes and nearly a fifth with Brisbane getting a full attacking set on Manly's line. So, man, we still could have won that same gamer. But I don't know what else you can say here. How worried are you about Manly at this stage? Someone asked, will they make the eight in the comments, Jared? And I say I definitely wouldn't expect them to be. They're not in my top eight at the moment.
No, they're not in my top eight. I can't see them getting there. Even in my preseason, I had them as high as ninth following their preseason challenge win. But really regretting that, as I've said a few times in these recap shows, I did swap them in the Knights between 9th and 13th. I had the Knights the higher side originally. That's five played, five lost without Jake Dravojevic. He is so important to their middle. I think even if he doesn't play but is available for the Blues, they should pick him for game one. Might not be the fittest he'll ever be, but God, he is so important to the middle. After Manly's preseason challenge win, their CEO came out and a little bit of it was pumping up Seibold's tyres, and a lot of it seemed to be having another shot at Des Hasler. He basically said, our culture's new here. You can feel this side's reinvigorated. And I mean, I talk about an early crow that's not looking good now. I have struggled to get a read on Manly this year, so I haven't had too much negative or too much positive to say for them. It's trending in a negative direction now. Sorry, Manly fans. I'm starting to see a bit where, yeah, I'm worried. There was a stat a few years ago that Manly don't win very well without Tom Trbojevic, and Tom Trbojevic isn't himself this year. I know he insists that he's not injured, and he said he's frustrated. The media need a layoff. They're always, you know, thinking something's wrong with him, and it's not affecting his performance. And then we have Seibold saying you can't compare him to his Dally M season, and that's fair enough, but he's just not involved. His movement's not right. There just seems something a little bit off with Tom. If he's not 100% by the midway point of the season, I think most people will put a line through Manly. But yeah, clinical by the Broncos, only allowing that one try in the 77th minute. They're probably still the team to beat in this competition. Them and the Rabbitohs at the moment, you would say. Saturday open with the Panthers Warriors.
I'll follow on to it because there's heaps of comments coming through about Manly. So I think they're top heavy in the way they're structured, in the way of who they rely on, and some of your best played, your highest paid players, like DCE, okay, he's not doing much wrong, but Jake Trbojevic is one of your highest paid, didn't play. He's got the calf injury, right? Tom Trbojevic, obviously your highest paid, and you've touched on him. He's not performing. Schuster, with his new contract, and you let Foran walk, is what probably like the fifth or sixth highest paid player at the club. You're not contributing at all. We know there's off-field issues there. So when you're top heavy and you need those guys to be the elite in the competition, and really none of them are firing. Again, I'm like DCE probably holding his own, but that's not enough. That's a big issue. And then Seibold, like I did say this when he got hired, is that the best choice? He was paid nearly $1 million reportedly to leave Brisbane, which was an absolute dumpster fire. I was never convinced. I don't know what he said to convince Manly that he was the right person for the job. So I would be genuinely quite concerned. I'm interested to hear what Manly fans have to say about it. I know there's a couple in the comments. One calling them the 2023 premiers, but I'm not sure. I think if he says, Maddox, he says everything will be fine. That's kind of like that meme with the, is it a dog sitting in the sitting at the dinner table and the house is on fire saying this is fine? That's what it's giving me memories of there.
Man, not only did Seabold convince him he's the right man for the job, he convinced him he's the right man for the job over Shane Flanagan, who's an assistant to him, a proven premiership winner that built a great roster at the Sharks and did fine there. So, look, there's a lot of question marks over Manly at the moment. They will have to come out and prove something in these next few weeks. Then on Saturday was the Panthers and the Warriors. The Panthers got up 18-6. My MVP was Dylan Edwards in this one, and I did see a comment roll before from Ryan Boyle on Facebook where he says Edwards proved he should be the New South Wales fullback. I won't quite put him over Teddy, but he did have a great game, didn't he, Winnie?
Yes, so I think he's definitely the fullback if Teddy's not available. We just talked about Turbo. Like, I wouldn't pick Turbo for New South Wales. We'll obviously get to Campbell Graham and South Sydney. We seem to kind of say the same thing about them every week. Look, but I actually would start with New Zealand in this game. I thought they were so gutsy. You guys let me know. Like, we're going to make this a quicker recap. I'm not going to dive into the calls where obviously it did seem like the Warriors got the short end of the stick. And they kept the game close. Even when Ford was sent to the bin, still kept it within 8 points and had chances to score. And had the Warriors scored in that period where they had the ball in the Panthers line, it could have been a really interesting finish. But look, what you have to say about Penrith is while their attack does not look crisp this season for the most part, the DNA in this team that won multiple premierships is still built around the defense, and the defense was there on Saturday to hold New Zealand to one try. You know, a week after New Zealand couldn't score a try, and then when Sifakula was sent to the bin, you knew New Zealand was probably just going to crack, and Spencer Lenu was a late inclusion. That's not a guy you like to face out there, and he did barge over at the end, which ultimately decided who covered the line. So a bit rough if you did have you know, New Zealand plus 9.5 or 10.5. And one other thing I'll say about this game is that was then three straight favourites winning. And I had this feeling that the weekend was kind of going to script and it felt like a predictable weekend, but it did change after that one.
Yeah, certainly did. Another brave effort by the Warriors. I think you're absolutely perfect in that assessment. That was their third game in 11 days, which is really, really tough draw, to be perfectly honest. And this game is just reflective of both sides at the moment. Panthers are a better side. They're the back-to-back reigning premiers, and Warriors are an improving side that didn't, you know, do themselves any disservice. They showed up for their fans and put in a great effort. I will say there's a higher expectation for the Panthers when we talk about them these days. So I was probably more impressed by the Warriors in this game. And if the seasons continue on this trend where the Panthers aren't quite at their best or the team we know them are, whereas we're actually seeing the Warriors almost, I won't say improving every week, but playing consistently enough that there's signs there they could, you know, really be a side to go well in the finals. Maybe the Warriors could be trending ahead of the Panthers come finals time. I was really impressed with them. I won't say more impressed, but really impressed with them in this game. Super tough backing up again. The inconsistencies, though, and the unfair moments for the Warriors in this one just left you feeling a little bit sorry for them. And the biggest headline out of this game will be their major sponsor, which is One, which is formerly Vodafone. He said that it was blatant cheating. And now the NRL referees are looking at whether it was defamation and looking to potentially sue him. It's ended up a big mess. He won't be a sponsor long term because, as we know, it's the Telstra NRL Premiership. So a lot of off-field, you know, stuff coming from this game also. But yeah, both sides can take positives, undoubtedly.
And then can I tidy up a comment I made? Because I said I'd pick Edwards if Teddy wasn't available. Christo Bliss rightly says Latrell would be ahead. Although there's a good argument that if Teddy was unavailable like the week of the game, Edwards is a one-for-one switch and you could just leave Latrell. Of course, Latrell is in my team at left center, but fair point. And we're going to get to Souths very soon.
I reckon you leave Latrell in the centers in that situation just because Edwards is so similar to the way Teddy plays. You don't have to change your game plan too much. But the Dolphins in the Sharkies game, this one absolutely took me by surprise. The Dolphins win 36-16, 30 of those points coming in, I think, like the first 30 minutes. My MVP was Valence Tafare, who on debut was awesome. Two tries. I think I might have seen someone in the tripod actually tip him for a hat trick at $251. And he came pretty close to that. I know you were doing really happy watching this one.
Well, it sunk my multi. It didn't end up being the decisive leg because it would have come down to Parramatta. So I've got to be honest, I cheer for the pot ahead of the Dolphins and I was stunned by this one. I can't pick my own team all that well. Like in games where I thought they could have a letdown And you got the Dolphins coming in after pouring everything in down in Canberra, falling agonizingly short. You got the Sharkies who are flying. I did not see this one coming in the Battle of the Finns. You know, Cronulla was kind of ambushed at Magic Round last year. They were double-digit favorites to Canberra. I think Canberra even had sin bins in the game and still won. And the same thing happened here. This is where the upsets began. Cronulla were double-digit favorites. Jesse Bromwich was withdrawn 24 hours before kickoff. And yet, as you say, it's 30-0 after 31 minutes. It's just an avalanche. They're harnessing the energy of a boisterous crowd. And I couldn't barely believe my eyes. We gave you the scoop, in fact, on Val Meninga, saying on Wednesday, you know, the secret was out that he was going to get the start and what type of player he is. He scores a second try, kind of solo, just getting the ball flat-footed and still bowling through, and also had a decisive try in the second half. However, it wasn't game over. That's the funny thing at 30-0. Although the crowd seemed a bit stunned, and so did the Sharks, once Cronulla got two tries late in the first half and it was just a 20-point deficit, I mean, we've seen 20-point leads blown in Shark games and in Dolphin games already this year. It was going to be really key who's kind of scored first after halftime. But this is where, you know, Wayne's magic, like Wayne's men in his 900th game, showed that desperation. And you've got to be desperate. Even when you're up 20, up 24 or 30, you've got to be desperate because you can't give away cheap ones when your lead is big. Or the next thing you know, the lead can dwindle. But it didn't, with Tafare scoring his second in the second half, and the massive upset was sealed. And another player that played really well for the Dolphins, who would be in my Origin mix as we tease ahead, would be Tom Gilbert, having an outstanding year for the new venture.
Yeah, Tommy Gilbert's such an underrated signing for them. I think for the Dolphins moving forward, I'm really going to pay attention to reasons they could get up for games, because, I mean, Suncorp seems to be a great venue for them. I believe only the one loss to the Broncos, and God, there were some circumstances around that.
They did lose to the Rabbitohs.
Okay, yeah,
right. Rabbits. But the Broncos lost. They played that well. They had a lead, which is like great. The only game that they didn't play outstanding was that Rabbitohs game, and I think they led that at halftime as well. They just got a sin bin. So you're right. Like when they've played at Suncorp, for the most part, they've been really outstanding.
And I'd forgive any team to losing to the Rabbitohs with how they've been playing so far this year.
Exactly.
The other big factor, we spoke about it, but we didn't include it enough in either of our tipping, was Wayne Bennett's 900th. The Dolphins have shown time and time again this season that for big moments, they do get up, such as their first game at Redcliffe, et cetera, et cetera. So I am disappointed that I guess we didn't pay more attention to that, because it is such a special milestone. You could really see the players did play for him there.
I will just touch on that, because everyone said it after the game. Oh, it was Wayne Bennett's 900th, of course. But everyone knew it was his 900th before. And I didn't mention it deliberately. I guess that's just the way I look at games. You won't hear me like often saying a milestone's going to influence my tip, because I kind of feel like, you know, it could be, or if it wasn't his 900th coaching, they'd say, oh, he's going for his 500th win, or it's this player's, you know, 300th or whatever. You know, there's quite a lot of milestones these days. I know it's obviously massive, but I didn't put a lot of credence into it, so it's not kind of fair for me to say, oh, like, of course that happened. I got to be honest, that was a pretty shocking result.
I mean, hindsight's beautiful, but I usually do look at milestones and stats and little quirky things like that, because I just always feel the NRL is so close that a lot of time you're looking for that mental edge, or at least I'm in my tipping. So yeah, I am disappointed I missed this one, but I will say, like, 100% accountability, I was really keen on the Sharks. I talked them up as my premiership favorite in the previous show. That's how keen I was on them. So of course I had to tip them here. I mean, the other team I was really keen on was the Roosters, and then we'll get to that, but they didn't go so well either. Maybe I've cursed those teams. Maybe I've cursed them, because they were going well before I come on this show and talked them up like that. The thing that I was most impressed by here for the Dolphins was how they won, because now they've won in tight games. They've come from behind against the Titans. They've won a game now where they've come out and blown their opponent off the park, and they didn't really get a full chance, but they almost, maybe not all, no, probably not the right word, they had an opportunity to win in Golden Point last round. So they're putting themselves in positions and winning these games in multiple different ways, which is the really impressive thing for me. And for the Sharkies, I'm just interested to see how they respond. They had a devastating loss, you would say, to the Warriors 4 weeks ago. They then went on a three-game win streak. How do they respond to this one? Do they sort of prove what I was saying last week in the preview correct, that they are an elite side in this competition? Or is this them sort of coming back to the pack and us starting to realize that, yeah, they're a great side, but they're probably not pushing for the premiership like I thought they might be?
I'm going to put you on the spot, Clarkie. I'm going to slightly tweak Christo Bliss's question. He's asking, do the Dolphins make the eight? You let us know what you guys reckon, but I'm going to put you on the spot, Clarkie. Who finishes higher on the ladder, Titans or Dolphins?
Dolphins will, I think. Yeah, I think Dolphins will. I think we're looking good and we're showing signs of improvement, but I think the Dolphins with Wayne Bennett in charge are probably equipped to navigate through a 27-round season a little bit better than we are. And I also think they will lose less important players during the origin period. We'll lose likely Fifita and Tino, who are our two best players. That's, you know, 6-8 weeks there where they're not at 100%. So, yeah, I have to be realistic and I have to say the Dolphins should probably finish higher than us, unfortunately.
That's high praise, and both currently sitting in the top eight as we speak.
I didn't know that. You put a smile on my face. Let's stop the season early. Then it was the Rabbitohs and the Melbourne Storm. The Bunnies won that 28-12. I went for Cody Walker with my MVP in this one. This is a Bunny side that was high on confidence. Although the Storm did score the 12 points, I never really felt they were a chance of winning this one. Did you get that vibe as well?
I mean, 12-6 at halftime to the Rabbitohs, and the Storm had had more of the ball. So I wasn't saying it's game over then, but the Rabbitohs scored three straight, you know, in the second half, and then it was. And the fact that the Storm had had more possession in the first half and couldn't really do anything with it while the Rabbitohs were so clinical with their chances, you did suspect it. And it's just, well, it's disappointing for me for a few reasons. This was billed to be the blockbuster of the round. I talked about how no team had had a bad performance off a bye. I think when we looked closer into that, I still think every team that come off a bye has won so far this year, apart from Penrith, who lost in golden point to Parramatta in one of the games of the year. And I would definitely not say they played badly. So basically everyone gave a great account of themselves after the bye until Melbourne, realistically, they were limited. But then again, Souths are making everyone look ordinary. Look at what they did to Brisbane the week before. And when we're not saying Brisbane's a bad side, when Latrell Mitchell's setting up tries with a right foot kick, you know, to some degree, it's just like, what can you do? As I say, Souths blow the game apart second half, and then we should have won the mixed match up. Like 30 points was probably too much to ask to chase down against Melbourne. But once Souths got to 28, you know, and they had a chance to score on the final play, Alex Johnston, we talked about milestones before. It was his 200th, right? And you did call that, and you said that third time might be a chance scoring in a milestone match, which he did. He had a double. And Cody Walker was deliberately going short side to try and get him his hat trick. And he dropped the pass, like the best finisher we've ever seen. And, you know, if he catches that, South score right in the final minute. We win the mixed matchup with an epic comeback, but it wasn't to be. However, Campbell Graham again was outstanding. So I don't want to hear, oh, let's have him on the wing outside Turbo. No, you just pick him at right center, best right center in the competition. I think you don't pick Turbo. We touched that before. And I also think, for South Sydney, it's their middle forward rotation, which is just unreal. Like Arrow and Burgess, both over 100 meters off the bench, they just keep coming at you. And so that's the South Sydney story. And then back to Melbourne, the questions have to be asked, like, when's Pappenhausen coming back now? Because, you know, it was said pre-season, oh, he's not going to be ready for round one. Some people didn't even know that. Like, it wasn't known. Well, then it was round eight targeting. You know, obviously we're round 10 now, and he has said, oh, it's a slow process. There's been some setbacks, but they need him back. And then when he comes back, he's not necessarily going to be 2022 start of the year Pappenhausen either. So it is a bit concerning for Melbourne fans.
And Melbourne have really undersold this injury from the start. His knee was completely shattered. No one in the NRL has ever suffered that injury. It's never happened before. So it's such a unique recovery that I do not expect him to be 100%, maybe until 2024 round eight, once he's got match fitness again and that's allowed time to heal. I will say, when Alex Johnston got the ball and had the chance to score his hat trick, would have been the best call ever, because he hadn't scored in two games, he hadn't scored in two milestone games. And I said, if you're an omen better, a lot of people think good things come in three. Can you imagine third game without a try is a hat trick, third milestone's a hat trick, three tries? It would have been bloody brilliant. But the Rabbitohs are so high on confidence in the moment. You can just see it in the way they play. They know their blueprint. They know what they want to do to you, and they go out and do it. And they execute that game plan brilliantly. They don't deviate from it. They don't get dragged into how you want them to play. They have done that earlier this year against the Roosters. They got dragged in. But since that, they have absolutely learnt their lesson and been really clinical. And I think that can go one or two ways come finals. It could make them so refined that they are just run over the top of teams because their game plan is so elite and they just got to play their style. Or maybe teams start to game plan around it and they start to think, we need to build a blueprint around how the Rabbitohs want to play because they've played this way all season. And teams do that. When Trent Robinson beat the Storm in the 2018, I think it was, grand final, he said post-game, we knew how to beat the Storm in round one this year, but we purposely didn't use that game plan until deep in the finals because we knew we'd face them at some stage. So teams do it. You've got to give them credit for it. Storm, noticeably flat. And Craig Bellamy, he's just not able to spur that reaction like he was in previous years. Previous years, it didn't matter who came into the jersey. They just step up and do a great job. And there are games this year where you can see the traces of that old DNA, the Melbourne Storm that we knew from the 2010s and the start of the 2020s. But there's other games where you just notice it's missing, that the DNA is not fully there. They have lost a lot of experience in the middle through the Bromwich boys and Felice Kaufusi. And you can just see it's not quite the Brandon same Smith Melbourne too. Storm. Oh, and Brandon Smith, of course. How could I forget? There's so much experience. And yeah, the traces of the DNA there, but this isn't the same Melbourne Storm team, unfortunately. And I can see why Craig Bellamy will probably wrap it up with his coaching career at the end of this year. Then it's the Tigers and the Dragons. The Tigers go back-to-back. They win 18-16. My MVP was David Clemmer, but no one stood out to me too much in this one. Maybe you could go Jareem Buller. I feel like he's been pretty good in his last few games. You would have been at the ground for this one, or did you arrive a little bit later?
No, we were here for Sundays. We picked a great day to go along. This game was basically everything you would expect. Didn't think it was going to be pretty. Didn't know who was going to win. Neither of them looked like they wanted to win all that much. It was a bit of an eyesore, but it was exciting because it was tense. Bateman was scratched pre-game, so I actually thought that would have tipped the scales to the Dragons. I mean, they had their chances. I say back and forth game. For one, the Dragons finally picked the spine that I only called for 2 years ago. Once we saw what Hunt can do at nine and you knew you had Sullivan, Amone and Sloan, you finally got them all. Let the kids play. I think that may be the first game that Hook actually started with that spine formation. It might be the last game he coaches. I'll get to that. They nearly had the spectacular finish. It was so classic Dragons. Opportunity to kick a two-point field goal to go to extra time, which funnily enough, we had our big crew there and we had a few different outcomes if any of them happened. Tristan was going to shout the whole bar and one was a two-point field goal and one was golden point. But typical Dragons, it's a horrible pass from dummy half. And it goes to Hunt's feet. But then he toes it through, nearly spectacular try. They find Sully, and Sully just tries to get too fancy with it ultimately. Ravaloa can't quite cross. But, yeah, going back to the Tigers, it's like multiple times in the game, they didn't want to kick the ball on fifth tackle. Both teams just dropped it in the play of the ball. So it was kind of like they don't really know how to win yet, but somehow they have won two in a row. And I noted as well, Buller, he's an exciting player, and it's exciting for the Tigers that you've kind of unearthed this kid, or you've grabbed him, you've recognized the talent, and you're bringing him through. And I was speaking to some Dragons fans. I felt bad. We had a guy that Siebes, I shout him out, came from Melbourne when he got the opportunity with the tripod. He said, "I'm looking up flights. I'm coming." And he's a diehard Dragons fan. We had another Blanchy there, and I felt bad for the boys. I wanted them to see their team win. And the crazy thing is, couple of the boys said to me, "I'm not even sad because at least Hook's going to get fired." So that's how dire it has become when you don't even want your own team to win because the coach is taking you nowhere.
I think it was round 11 last year that Trent Barrett got sacked by the Bulldogs. This seems to be around the time where teams start to pull the trigger on their coach. Though there was reports today they're going to persist with Griffin and just make the decision in the background, which is, I mean, if I was the Dragons, if he's not going to be there, I would just promote an assistant coach and give them some extra experience. At least you're helping your future there. But it was the Tigers' first back-to-back win since April last year. So I think that that's awesome for the club, awesome for the fans who deserve that. I had a follower take in round four or five sent into my page where someone said the Tigers will not win a game all year. And I said, well, it's a long season. They have to win four, maybe five at least. And people were genuinely laughing at me and saying that is ridiculous. How are they going to win four games? Well, they're halfway there and it's round 10. They've still got 17 rounds to win two more. So I think people were being a little bit harsh on the Tigers, who weren't playing good footy in the second half. The team who wasn't playing good footy is the Dragons. Ben Hunt summed it up post-game when he said, we were dumb today. And there's really no further analysis required. It's another week where they've scored the same amount of tries as their opposition and not won. If you look at their last five games now, and you put all the teams they played tries on this side and theirs on the other, they got more tries. Mm. If they're in a position to win these games, and you can imagine
with zero wins.
And could you imagine if they won the last five? They'd be top four.
They'd be top of the ladder.
Griffin would be re-signed in a heartbeat for the next 5 years, but there's just something off with the Dragons. These are all winnable games. Respectfully to the Tigers, this was a winnable game for the Dragons. My Titans was a winnable game for them because they did it in round two. But yeah, this was... I think both sides need to improve a lot from this one in the next week, or they could be getting a bit of a hiding in the next game. Well, the next round, sorry. And we've got two more games to recap here. Before we get to that, we will get a clip from Tristan up. Tristan is the CEO of TopSport, one of our sponsors on the show, and he's going to give us a market recap from Magic Round.
Hello, everyone. Tristan Merlihan here from TopSport. Just coming good after a massive night and day at Magic Round. It was great to meet plenty of the crew up there and obviously see a few of the guys again. So it was very enjoyable. Thanks to everyone who came along and had an enjoyable day. We got to see a few upsets on Sunday as well. The massive upset of the Cowboys, which was a really handy result from our end, and the Titans getting the Chockies again, which was good to see live. They were a couple of handy results from our end. On the big result, though, on the weekend was the Dolphins against the Sharks. There were a lot of multis rolled into the Sharks in that game. Nearly everyone had them head-to-head and also minus. So the Dolphins are certainly becoming my second team there. They've been unbelievable this year and just managed to keep outperforming expectation, which is amazing when you look at that team on paper. It just shows how good a coach Bennett is. The game where the punters had a good lead early in the week because there were a couple of games where we were well and truly behind the eight ball. The Broncos were very, very well backed against Manly. That line moved a couple of points. And then also the other game that was a big go was the South City Rabbitohs against the Storm, where they were backed very, very well. And that was a pretty ugly result from our end. We needed the overs as well, so just fell short in that game. But all in all, Magic Round, another unbelievable success. Great to see so many people at the footy as well. Hope you're back to winner over the weekend and, of course, gambled responsibly.
Good on you, Tristan. He's a generous fella, shouting many rounds, of course, putting on the tickets for us, and as well as the prizes people won a lot during the day. But he was a happy man too, as he said, when the Sharks knocked out everyone's multis, or rather the Dolphins knocked everyone's multi out on Saturday night. And anyone who reloaded, most likely probably rolled the Roosters or Parramatta, if not both, on Sunday. Tristan was feeling even more generous. He said to us at one point when the Cows were up 20-0, in this next game we'll discuss, if they just hold on for 13 plus, he was shouting the bar. And we got there. Luckily, no 8-point try when the Roosters scored late. So that was one of the highlights of yesterday.
That sounds like a great highlight. Unfortunately for the Roosters, they didn't have many. I'll come clean. So the Cowboys won this 20-6. And if you guys watch the preview show, you will see how confident, how keen I was on the Roosters. And that was just based on the last 3 weeks from either side. The Roosters looked like a side that were trending in an upwards direction, and the Cowboys were the complete opposite. They looked to be trending in a downward direction, but full accountability. I didn't just get this wrong. I got this horribly wrong, and it was a terrible, terrible breakdown by myself. Full accountability there. I mean, I'm interested to see how both sides respond to this, because for the Cowboys, in our preview show, we spoke about last year. When it was good for the Cowboys, when it was working, it was their defense. Everything started with their defense. And that was there because although the Roosters did score six, it was in the final 2 minutes. The game was over. I think it was a repeat set. And it didn't really matter. You could tell it didn't matter to them. Realistically, incredible defense. And if the Cowboys can keep that consistent, it's something they can build off. For the Roosters, how do they respond? Because I thought they were pretty poor in New Zealand the week before. But I did think they had an advantage from that. It was very heavy rain, and it ended up raining pretty heavy for this game. So that's 2 weeks in a row where they've been playing in the conditions. Now people are saying they need to move Manu back out to the centers, bring Sam Walker in. So there's all these changes, and I'm interested to see how the Roosters respond. Do they sort of cave to the pressure and make these changes, or do they persist with Manu at six? But yeah, I think the takeaway from this game is it's exciting for Cowboys fans because the blueprint is back to be a successful club. The blueprint you used last year has been implemented. It's worked. And now it's just being about being consistent off the back of it. Whether they can do that remains to be seen. Yeah. Your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I'll slightly disagree. First of all, about the Roosters playing it in the rain. I didn't think that poor in New Zealand. I thought that's a tough trip. Went over there and they held them to zero, the only team that's been held to zero this season, and scoring 14 in the rain. I know Roosters got some fortuitous calls, but they were pretty decent, at least in Auckland a week ago. And I also didn't think the rain would favour the Roosters because it, like, from my observation, being at the ground, it was pretty unexpected. It was a overcast day. And then suddenly, 15 minutes before kickoff, there's just a torrential downpour. We were so lucky. We were just sheltered where we were sitting. Everyone in front of us and everyone around the ground was getting drenched, like just hammered down. And I thought to myself, this tropical storm, like this is more familiar for Cowboys players. Like this is the kind of dump down they get up north. And it brings the underdog into it because the Roosters want to play kind of skillful, sometimes flashy footy and get the ball to their playmakers. And this kind of evened the game up. I also said to people, get your phone out back unders because we've just seen the heavens open up. And in the end, it was only 6-0 at halftime because the rain did carry on through the first half. Cotter getting that try. We're talking about origin selections at the end. I think he's another one Slater can't leave out. And I'm sorry to tell you, Clarky, you've got crackling or something going on again. I don't know if it's at your end or if there's anything you can have a look at there. But second half, when it is anybody's game, there's only 6 points in it and the Roosters are underwhelming, but they could come out and play better, but it wasn't the case. In fact, the Cowboys went bang, bang. Roosters couldn't defuse a kick and it was 18-0 suddenly. And as I say, the conditions I feel didn't suit the Roosters, but come on, can't you change the game plan? They've still got a quality forward pack. I feel like the Roosters needed to go more direct. And you did mention Sam Walker. I mean, it has to be at least acknowledged that you've dropped him. And you've averaged 10 a game in two games since dropping him. What, you know, weren't you meant to be improving the attack with Manu at six? But finally, this was another example. And look, I didn't predict this either. And it's, you know, don't be too hard on yourself, mate. The Roosters are $1.25. Most judges would have picked them to win. And you're not going to call every upset, that's for sure. And that's why we love it, because we get games where we didn't see coming. But this is another game where a team had their worst performance of the season in the Cowboys, destroyed 44-6, you know, 10 days earlier, coming back and actually probably having their best game of the season. So the bounce back factor, which we try to look for, but I just didn't have any faith in the Cowboys because I thought something could be fundamentally wrong. Suddenly you get a win like this, could be a jolt of confidence, long way to go, and you can't write the Cowboys off.
I hope it's a jolt of confidence, and I certainly agree it was their best game this year. I think from the Roosters, when I say they were disappointing, I agree with you, actually. That was an unfair thing for me to say, holding the Warriors to zero. I was purely looking at that from an attacking lens. I think when the Roosters are at their best, there's more than two tries on that side with the spark they've got, such as Teddy, Joey Manu. I mean, you don't even need to go on once you say those two. But yeah, how both sides look next week from this one is going to be the most interesting thing, I think. Final game of the round. My Titans get a win, 26-24. Now, I tipped this, but with no great confidence. My MVP was David Feeder in this one. I just think at this stage, we're going to talk Rowan's forwards after this. He'll factor in, no doubt. Was this a fun one to watch with everyone in the Top Sport Lounge? I imagine it would have been a pretty cool game to watch.
Yeah, it was. Like, as I said before, great day. We picked the Sunday. You know, that was a surprising upset, the previous one we talked about, and the other two games went down to the wire. And considering that Top Sport sponsors us and sponsors the Titans helped arrange for such a massive batch of tickets. We had two rows of 20 all in one spot. So it was pretty unreal. And I think it was apt that they got that win, which sends them, as I said before, inside the top eight. And, you know, as I was chatting to Tristan on the day, he's talking about, and you know all too well, that the Titans have blown a couple of games this year as well. It could be even higher. Now, I gave out a 50-1 multi that I think the first five legs all won well, and then the Sharkies lost, and that was like the shortest odds of all the legs, and we were all gutted in the group. It would have come down to Parramatta. So I thought for sure Parramatta wins just to rub in the multi. But in the end, imagine if it came down to this and we lost. That would have probably hurt even more. Before I say anything more about the game, I'd actually like to know how you saw this one, because I know you would have been watching closely, and I dare say you would have had a few nervous moments with the Titans leading in the second half, but not doing enough to make it easy.
Plenty of nervous moments, but I will say this is the first time we've beat the Eels in 6 years. So, I mean, it's hard not to be happy when your beta side has had the wood over you for so many years in a row. It's just great to get one back. The Eels were missing something in this game, I thought, because against the Knights, they were so clinical. Their spine was awesome. Their spine was engaged. It wasn't quite the same in this one, though. I will give Dylan Brown huge raps. I think he had about 250 meters of the 5'8", which is really unheard of. And he had over 200 last week as well. His running game is on point. But just like the Roosters we spoke about in the last game, the Eels were great 1 week and relatively poor the next. It just seems to be the NRL at the moment. It's not so much, or maybe it is the competition being so even at the moment, but I think another element has to be teams being inconsistent and mixing their form this year. That's 2 wins in a row since our devastating loss to the Dolphins. Now, it happened. It really sucked. Now that it's happened, all the team can do is focus on their response to that. And I thought the last 2 weeks, they responded pretty brilliantly. And as a Titans fan, I'm really happy with this one. I was obviously nervous when the Eels looked like they were starting to come back. I think it's a really good response from you can't even really call it a tough loss against the Dolphins. It was a devastating loss, really.
But if you could have looked at that slate of those three opponents and someone told you you're going to win 2 of 3, you would take it. So I know that you're such a diehard fan that you're still like, you're scarred from that loss because of the circumstances. But to bounce back and win 2, and yeah, element of, you know, fortune in this one. I mean, I was going to mention Khan Pereira, an excitement machine. I mean, he takes an intercept try at a key moment. If he doesn't get his hand to that ball, I think the Eels are scoring on the right wing, you know? Like, that's a 12-point swing right there. I also had Fifita, in fact, as the best player on the ground. In fact, let me put up Clarkie's – this is just Clarkie's Queensland forward pack. And I it's easy for me to pick it apart because it's impossible to only, like, pick this number of players for Queensland, which is obviously a starting pack and, you know, 3 bench forwards, because we all know – Harry Grant's going to be one of them as a hooker rotation. I've got to find. Yes, oh, here it is now. Slater's going to have to leave some good players out. Why don't you talk us through the pack? I'd like to hear what other people say, and then I'll tell you what my changes would be. There's only probably a couple more weeks till it'll be get made official.
Yeah, it's so much depth for Queensland at the moment. I wouldn't be shocked if most viewers look at this right now and think, well, I've got changes. Just such is Queensland's, particularly middle depth at the moment. I'm going to start the game with Christian Welch and Tino Fa'asuamalawi. I will say Welch is probably the least in form of everyone here, but I just feel for his experience and the fact he's played in so many grand finals for Melbourne. He's played in Origins before. You've got to have him there starting. Then I go with Ben Hunt at 9. I know Harry Grant is the better hooker, but I just think it worked so well last year. It also worked great for the Kangaroos at stages throughout the World Cup. So I'm going to keep the 1-2 punch hookers there. Back rows, really tough to leave Kurt Capewell out. We know how great he is, but I just think David Fifita is playing so well. I couldn't justify bringing him off the bench because he's not really just an X-factor player this year. He's involved in everything. He's 30-plus tackles a game. He's averaging more metres than Capewell. And then he does have that X-factor side to him as well. Felice Carfusi, again, I just feel like you've got to have him there. That's kind of a spot that's locked him. Him and Welch are both experienced players, one on an edge, one in a middle. They've done everything in the game together. And he's in fine form with intimidation factor. Paddy Carrigan at lock. Now, I can't tell you how close I was to putting Corey Horsburgh as the starting lock and bringing Paddy onto the bench. People will disagree, but he won the Wally Lewis medal doing that last year, coming off the bench. Seems to work great. I will start him, though. I feel like he's continued to improve. He's now won a World Cup with the Kangaroos, so I think he can have that same impact starting there. But that does leave Corey Horsburgh on the bench there. There's so much depth for that spot there. It was Lindsay Collins last week. It could very well be Fotuaker. It could be Thomas Gilbert. It could be Hopgood. There's probably names I'm forgetting. Ruben Cotter, got to have him off the bench. His energy, his impact off the bench is really second to none. The only person that used to come off the bench and do it better was Brandon Smith, the Storm. That energy injection into Origin when people start to get fatigued around the 25-minute mark is so important. And then Jai Arrow. I like to always carry a back row on my bench. So I've gone with Jai because he can play middle as well. It gives you that option of I can play in the middle at prop, lock. He's played a bit of hooker before at the Titans. Or he can play back row if we do get an injury. I think it would probably involve something like Jai Arrow moving into back row for feeder into the centers. Wouldn't be preferable, but you've got to have that depth in Origin. Because we're not carrying a true utility in the 14 role, Harry Grant, strictly a hooker. That's why I've gone the way of Jai Arrow over another middle forward there, which there's plenty of options, like I said before. But yeah, interested to hear your changes because, as I said, there's just so much depth, isn't there?
Yeah, well, what I agree with, like, you pick Chino starting prop. I like the call for Fida. Everyone thinks, oh, he'd be so good impact off the bench, but he's playing so well, he'll impact the game when he's on the field and he can start, and then maybe he can get through the majority of the minutes to see how he goes. Anyway, Carrigan, I might clean up what you said. You said, yeah, he did win the Wally Lewis medal off the bench. If memory serves, Cotter was ruled out very early in game one, and then Carrigan played bulk middles minutes at lock, and Cotter didn't play game three, and Carrigan did start game three when they won. So, I mean, for me, you just pick Carrigan at lock. You don't overthink that position. Horsberg, I can't remember. I'm not putting myself as much under pressure because I don't think I've named an exact team, but he's right on the cusp. I can't remember if I mentioned him. He was probably Canberra's best on Friday night. I think Cotter has to be there as well on the bench. And Arrow, I can't squeeze him in. I probably pick Tom Gilbert ahead of Jai Arrow, which just goes to show the depth for Queensland. I'm also picking Lindsay Collins over Welsh. I know Welsh has like kind of been there and done it. He hasn't like obviously played rep since the it was Achilles injury last year. And I'm not sure if he's been undeniable, where I've liked Collins' form. And then I'm still not 100% sure about Capewell either. The thing about Capewell is you mentioned Fifita could play in the centers. It's a bit frightening if Queensland were forced to do that. Yeah. If we do get, and what happens if we get a fullback injury, a winger injury, or HIAs? I almost feel like Capewell might be able to stay in the team even if it's off the bench because you can trust him a bit more at, say, left center, and then Val Holmes can play wing or fullback. So I'd like to hear what other people think. It's great to debate. It's good kind of water cooler chat for any Queenslanders out there. We threw it at the end for New South Welshmen that might have just had enough of round 10 and Queensland chat. But I just did want to say as well, once again, huge thanks to Tristan and Top Sport and Jeff and Dan, particular admins of the pod for a long time. They did a lot to make yesterday happen. Thank you to everyone who came along from far and wide. People have come even from overseas and other states to be there. It was great fun. Got to meet a bunch of people in the flesh. Some people I've known for years through the pod I never met in person till yesterday. If you are watching and you'd love to come to one, let us know, because if we've got more demand, we can organize more events. And I know Clarkie's got to be at the next one as well.
Yeah, looking forward to hopefully we can organise something towards the end of the season, maybe something at Seabus or something like that. But no, it sounds like a great day from all accounts. That pretty much does wrap up our show. But before we do wrap up the show, though, probably a chance for you to plug the merch and let some of our viewers know what's going on there as well.
Oh, yeah, thanks, mate. Well, I'm wearing the tripod hoodie. We've got T-shirts as well. If you're interested at all, it is limited edition. You're only going to be able to put an order in the next kind of 2 weeks. And then we're going to order whatever people want and they'll get sent out to you. So there's a link in this show description. You can click there and you can see like the stock that you can get your hands on and the pricing there. So if that's of interest to anyone. Otherwise, we'll be back on Wednesday. Let's keep this best bet win streak rolling, eh, Clarky? We're in positives on all front. Your take on Toppy after your win. Obviously, Maltese have done really well. But even though the mixed matchup lost, we're still, I think, a couple hundred in profit playing mixed matchups and best bets. And it's not easy to do, so we shouldn't take it for granted.
No, that's it. Once you nail one, you put yourself in profit with some play money for the next few weeks. Well, that will wrap up the show. Thank you very much to everyone who tuned in to this edition on the Monday. And we will see you on Wednesday at 6:30 p.m. to preview everything in round 11. Thanks again, and we'll see you then. Thank you.
Lego.